Hi, thank you. My name is Jennifer Pomerantz. I'm going to be switching gears a little to be talking more about the fast food retail environment and how the law can be used to fix some of the problems identified in the earlier slides, and that also Maura will talk about some aspects in New York City. So I have no conflicts or relationships to disclose. I will first talk about the federal menu label law and where we are with that, which is actually no different if I gave this talk last year. Some state and local opportunities and zoning and licensing opportunities for local governments. So the menu labeling started in New York City, and then it spread around the country to states. This is a California example. And the federal government got on board by passing the federal menu labeling law within the Affordable Care Act in 2010. This applies to establishments that have 20 or more locations nationally, or vending machine operators that have 20 or more vending machines nationally. It requires calories to be posted on every type of menu board at those locations and on the vending machines, and then it requires an anchor statement like the ones we see on our food products. An average person consumes 2,000 calories a day on the menu board itself, and other information must be available on request. So since then, the FDA regulations to enact this, the law, and to put it into practice are still outstanding. They're supposed to come out at the end of this year or the beginning of next year, so we'll see what happens. There's some arguments with the grocers about whether it should apply to them. But the one thing is that the federal law trumps or preempts local establishments from being able to enact a law that would apply to the exact same establishments that the federal law applies to. So the way the states and local governments can get involved is to enact identical requirements, and this enables them to enforce the regulation themselves, because it's very unclear how the federal government plans to enforce a regulation in a restaurant that's obviously in a local level consideration. State and local governments can also pass laws that expand to retailers that are not covered by the federal law, so local restaurants, mom-and-pop stores, or chains that have less than 20 locations. But it's very important, because of the First Amendment, which I don't have time to get into the whole thing here, that this is factual information. You would never want to require some kind of symbol like this to be put up next to the burgers and fries in your restaurant. That's not a factual information, so do not do that. But if you're using factual information, that's how you can enact a law like this. But there are other problems with fast food restaurants besides the information environment. We obviously know there are signs, marketing through signs that you see. In addition, these kinds of signs, and also the location, the density within an area or location near schools, the low cost of food, and also the large portion sizes. So state and local governments have an ability to deal with this. States have what's called the police power. This enables them to act for the common good. And the police power is how states do most of its regulating for public health, zoning, sanitation, safety. These are all through their police power. And they can regulate for safety, health, welfare of their citizens. This is delegated to local counties and cities to varying degrees. So each county and city has to check with their own authority to determine how much they can do what we're talking about here today. It's not uniform across the country. But for the most part, governments can limit what goes on their own property. So government can totally keep off all fast food restaurants from hospitals, schools, and other government buildings. But regulating business has to be rational. The term rational is a legal term. Luckily, it's the lowest level of scrutiny. It's the easiest to pass, but it does mean that it has to have a reasonable basis and a reasonable means to achieve the basis. So the government doesn't want you to do something arbitrary and irrational or unreasonable. I'm sorry, the law doesn't allow you to do something irrational. So this leaves a lot of state and local opportunities. I won't talk about this, but New York City, Maura will talk about this. New York City enacted the nation's first trans fat ban. Cleveland followed suit. Healthy defaults, to enact exactly what Marlene was talking about, we'll talk about that a little. Sugary beverage serving size restriction that happened in New York. Again, Maura will talk about the actual restriction. I'm going to talk about some of the law related to that. Sugary beverage taxes, and then fast food taxes. So New York City's Board of Health enacted an ordinance that said that only 16-ounce sugary beverages could be sold at the food service establishments in the city. You probably know that New York has been sued, and they're in the middle of a lawsuit. This is a very New York-specific lawsuit, so cities and states around the country can enact this law and not worry about this lawsuit. This is a separation powers issue in New York, and what it means is that the Board of Health is in part of the executive branch, and they are given the authority to act by the legislator. They can only act within their authority, and the lawsuit is saying that the legislative branch should have been enacting this law and not the agency. So this is very New York specific, so the other cities and states can consider enacting this. It's also rational. New York would be, and any other city or state, or is using its police power reasonably targeting sugary beverages and using reasonable means by targeting serving size to foster public health. There's no fundamental right to a large cup size, despite what you heard the protests about freedoms being taken away, so this is not an argument against it. And the Supreme Court actually upheld other regulations under state and city's police power. This was not for obesity purposes, but because it was for police power and public health or environmental reasons, there's similar kinds of laws. Upheld North Carolina's law regulating the container of lard but not butter, Minnesota picking certain milk containers that they thought were a problem for the environment and not others, and then Chicago actually regulated the size and length of bread loaves, and the Supreme Court upheld this as a rational basis for under police power. Soda taxes are a method to increase the price of soda, to decrease consumption, make money on the taxes. The most recent efforts are coming out of California. San Francisco just last week talked about some soda taxes. The idea would be for fast food. In the fast food world, we look at the purchases of adults, adolescents, children, and preschoolers. You see, for the most part, French fries, soda, cheeseburgers, chicken nuggets, and baked goods. So you see each grouping of people do purchase soda, and it would impact that purchase. But Musa Farin, who is at Harvard, and colleagues, they found that obesity is mostly associated with highly processed or regular potatoes, meats, sweet and refined grains, and then sugary beverages and 100% juice. So if we look at the fast food purchases, it's actually exactly that. For the soda, the French fries, and the processed meats, and then baked goods. So basically, a fast food tax really makes sense if you want to capture the products being purchased at fast food restaurants. And Lisa Powell and colleagues did a lot of research showing that actually middle-income people are the bigger purchases are fast food, because I was worried about the regressivity of such a tax, and a lot of her research shows that it's actually more middle-income rather than low-income, and high school graduates rather than people who did not graduate high school. So that's one option. And then finally, fast food location density and signs, basically all represented in this one photo from California. Change Lab Solutions does a lot of technical assistance on zoning and licensing, so if anybody's thinking of getting involved in that, they have good resources. Zoning is when you regulate the use of a property, and licensing is when you regulate the business practices, so it really attaches to a business or a person, and zoning attaches to the property itself. Some zoning ideas. Now, the Supreme Court specifically upheld the right to zone for public health, so you can use zoning for that purpose. It's prospective, which means that you can't zone away an establishment that's already there. And so you would use zoning to change the built environment around you for the future. A lot of regulations have been put in place to zone the density of fast food restaurants, so there can't be too many in one place, zone away drive-throughs, take them away from schools, churches, recreational centers. And the rationale that has always been used, I've never seen an obesity rationale, although Change Lab does say that you could use it. If you plan to use that, again, I would work with Change Lab. If not, I would stick with the rationales that have been working through for hundreds of years. aesthetics, the property values of the community, keeping the charm of an old community, safety, traffic, pollution, odors, the environmental concerns associated with fast food restaurants. These have all been upheld and are in regulations and ordinances around the country. For example, Detroit banned all fast food restaurants 500 feet from schools. This is based on a spacing rationale to keep to disperse fast food around the community and away from schools. Another method is to use retail licensing. Again, this is addresses the business practices. Minnesota has an ordinance to, in order to get a license to run a grocery store, you have to have perishable food, including fruits and vegetables. So let's think about that in terms of fast food. Should we say they have to carry a salad? I don't know if people are buying salads, but can we make it the healthy default? Yes, and this is how you can get the healthy default into law, that if you want a license to have a fast food restaurant, you must carry, you must make the default healthy. And get those French fries out of that healthy default. It should be apples only. And then finally, retail signs. You can actually use either zoning or conditional licensing for this. You can condition the license of a retail establishment on obeying your requirements for signs, no signs, specific signs. And then you can also zone limits. When you use your zoning to limit signs, the First Amendment again comes in. You can't pick out a fast food restaurant and say no signs just for you, because you're distinguishing based on the message that they're providing. So what you have to do is make sure it's content neutral, which means it applies to all formula establishments. This is the Gap, this is Banana Republic, this is then McDonald's and those kind of places. You could do it to only restaurant chains, so it would apply only to restaurant chains, or you can apply this to everyone in your business district, and but it has to be content neutral. So an example here from Massachusetts in Braintree, in their commercial area, they have a limit of window signs can only be 20% of the total window. The ground signs must be less than or equal to 30 feet from the ground, 60 feet total square footage. Roof signs are prohibited, and the rationale they use are aesthetics and traffic safety. And so I'm just going to show you a couple signs. This one would violate that 20% limit, so you could see in the fast food restaurant you could that would violate it. These are huge signs. You might, 60, that is pretty tall. This would probably be in with their limit. You'd want to consider it. And then this is not a sign at all, yet it's on a top of a fast food restaurant. I would say that if you're considering these, you would want to take into consideration these types of things. I would ban this also if I was banning signs. I mean, this is probably worse than a sign in a community. And that's it. Thank you very much.